I will always start out when I'm counseling someone about formulating the story of their case. What is the big problem you have to solve for here? What is the major problem you have to overcome? And that's what you build your story around.
Welcome to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Series. My name is Adam Arkfeld, an entrepreneur, marketer, and seeker of high-performing habits, tips, and strategies. Each week, I'll bring to you an elite performer, a legal expert, or simply a strategy to help you see and follow the path to personal greatness in your firm and life. Thank you for joining us today. Now let's get started. Welcome everyone to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Arkfeld, president and founder of Prevail Legal Marketing. And today I have Doug Passan joining me. Doug is the owner of the law offices of Doug Passan and recently published a book called The Narrative Gym, introducing the ABT framework for persuasive advocacy. And we're going to be talking a lot about videos and stories and the persuasive advocacy realm here with Doug today. And we'll talk about what that means. So Doug, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just get started by hearing a little bit about your background in law and how that intersects with video and storytelling.
Awesome. So I'm a criminal defense lawyer, been in practice 25 years. All my life, when I was a kid, all I can think about when I thought about what I wanted to do as a grown-up was either lawyer or filmmaker. So, lawyer was, as a kid, I was always in trouble or arguing, and the adults would say, you should be a lawyer, you know, you can argue, which was, I think, code for saying you're a giant pain in my rear end, so, you know, law would be perfect for you. But the other thing was movies. I just loved movies. It was my refuge, just theater and being transported through story. And I always thought, wow, man, what a cool job that would be to make movies, right? And so I went to undergrad and I was basically, I think, headed to the law school track, but it was going to really be a toss-up between law school and film school at that point. I chose, obviously, law school, but the screenwriting, filmmaking, all storytelling never left me. So I had two tracks going where I was studying to become a lawyer, but I was still deeply immersed in story. And then very soon, in law school even, I figured out all we're doing as a lawyer is telling our client's story, right? And so I figured out really fast that I was going to get to do both of these things my whole life. And so I was making little movies on the side, like I made little goofy movies in high school and things like that. And then I think I spent the first 5 years or so of my practice just figuring out how to be a lawyer before I got real creative and said, I think it's time to really merge these two things. And I had a case where my client was had rehabilitated himself from a really serious drug addiction. And I was blown away by the before and the after. And, you know, movies are fundamentally stories told with pictures. It's a visual medium. And I thought, wow, there's no better way to advocate for this client than to show the transformation. And so that was sort of my catalyst to making my first movie for a case that I used at sentencing to convince the judge that this young man was worthy of a second chance because he had completely rehabilitated himself. And he got that second chance. And I was kind of off to the races. So I started, I don't do movies in every case, but they are super effective means of advocacy. We don't just use them in criminal cases. Civil lawyers use them to show damages in day in the life cases. They can be used for settlement negotiations, you name it. But the bottom line is it's all storytelling, right? I mean, you don't get to make a movie until you figure out what the story is. And story is nothing more than a problem in search of a solution. Every single movie you ever go to, every single book you read, every single play, the fundamental conflict in there is a giant problem that your protagonist needs to solve. So we lawyers, what do? That's what we do. We solve problems. And so narrative is the way that we do it. Even if I'm not making a movie, I'm working with lawyers to help them craft the narrative in their case. That's a lot. That was a long answer to your very short question.
No, that gave a great background that we can build off of. So it was perfect. how often are videos outside of what you do used in criminal defense or other types of cases? You know, I'm not a lawyer, but it's not something I've ever really heard of. Is it done very much at all?
I would say in the grand scope of the history of the law, this would still be in its infancy. But in 2005, I think, was when I started doing this, and I started training lawyers in the federal system to do it. So it's actually becoming more common in the federal criminal system. Still not, you're not going to see this a lot, but it's gaining popularity. It may be used a little bit less in the state system. It's definitely used a lot in capital cases, death penalty cases, more and more. I work on a lot of those cases. And like I said, the civil folks, I think they've known about this even longer than I have. So when they want to show damages, someone's injured or something like that, the best way to show it is what you call these day in the life videos, where you actually show them how they're struggling. You know, words only take us so far. But here, Adam, is how I know quintessentially that sentencing mitigation videos are a thing for real and forever in the legal system and in the zeitgeist. The Simpsons did an episode about sentencing mitigation videos in season 30, episode 15, called 101 Mitigations. Homer gets arrested for Grand Theft Auto, and Lisa Googled and found these sentencing mitigation videos, and the Simpsons set about making one for Homer. And I almost lost my mind because, you know, there's just a tiny handful of people in this lifetime that do this work. I had to basically hunt down the writer of the episode to see how he knew about this. And I actually, when I did, he said that it was from a news, like a Wall Street Journal or one of the, there's been some press about what I do. So he said that, I helped inspire the episode. And then he invited me and my whole family to California to watch a table read with the cast. So
really, so
one of the greatest moments of my entire life. I don't think there's anything I could do that would top that. But the point is, you know, it's a thing, and we know it's a thing because The Simpsons did an episode.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the podcast is over now because you've reached your pinnacle and we don't have anything else to talk about.
Yeah, what do I do after that, really? It's my favorite show of all time.
Yeah, well, there's nowhere to go but down now. So mm-hmm. I guess we're heading that direction.
That's cool. I'm comfortable because, you know, there too.
So talk to us a little bit about, well, I want to cover two areas, but I think I want to start initially with how attorneys might start conceptualizing, like integrating this into their practice. You mentioned, and then I want to talk more about just like what a story means, but you said, you know, you consult and you help people with storytelling and videos, but yeah. Are they doing it in their own firms? If someone's out there sitting there listening and they're like, oh, that sounds really interesting. Like, I don't really know how I would do that. How do you go from not doing anything like this and you really care and you want to create a compelling video to all of a sudden having a video that's from the story?
Well, you've got to call me or someone like me to do it, I think. I do like to empower lawyers to, you know, everybody's walking around in this lifetime with a beautiful video camera in their pocket. And so I do like to empower lawyers to try to do some of this themselves and begin to incorporate visuals even in smaller ways into their practice. But if you want to do a full-on sentencing video or video for another area of the law, you need to engage a professional. Because while it doesn't have to be glossy, slick, beautiful Hollywood style, in fact, that can work against you sometimes because it seems too manipulative, but it does need to be credibly told story, right? So only a lawyer or someone with a good legal background can work with another firm or a team to basically help make sure that the story they want to tell is the best one that's going to move the needle in whatever legal form they're trying to move the needle in. And also there's a forensic element to it. In other words, when your lawyers would get might get generally nervous once you press record on a camera because you're recording statements and things like that that could be discoverable in a proceeding later on. So if you just hire the wedding videographers, you know, somebody to do these things, you don't know what you don't know in terms of what you're stepping into from a discovery standpoint or an evidentiary standpoint. So you really do want to engage a legal professional to do this work. And, you know, maybe after once or twice of watching how it's seeing how it's done and everything else, you might feel comfortable doing it yourself as a lawyer. And then sometimes I'm just here as a consultant. So someone, a lawyer or a law firm may be doing it themselves, but they're going to kind of just engage me, not necessarily to produce the film, but to consult along the way to make sure everything's right along the way.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense. You know, you can do it a couple times by hiring a professional and then maybe start taking a couple things in-house when you have a comfort level. I was at an event quite a long time ago and they were talking about videos for advertising in particular. And basically the guy just changed the music over the same clip three different times. And it was such an impactful, you know, like display of just something as subtle as music changing the entire mood. And I mean, you know, this changing the entire mood of what someone's watching and changing the emotional reaction that you're really trying to achieve with the people related to your clients, right? So something as simple as music had a huge impact.
Well, it's so funny you say that because yesterday I was just watching this week's episode of This Is Us, which I love that show, you know, that show on NBC. And the last few minutes is a montage of things that are happening. And they overlaid a song by Brandi Carlile, Right on Time. I love her. She's one of my favorite artists. But I was sitting in my kitchen stool watching this, eating dinner and crying like a baby, you know? And I thought exactly what you said, like if that piece of music wasn't there, I wouldn't be crying like this, but I was, and it was so good. But that again is a line we walk, because that's great for TV, but in the legal world, and it's great for marketing, it's great for advertising, but in the legal world, you have to walk a fine line, because the last thing you want people to think is that you're being very overtly manipulative, or you're really trying hard to tug on their heartstrings like that. So while I do love to use music in these videos when I can, I'm always cautious about it, because we want to make sure that it's authentic and that it feels right.
That's interesting. That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, for me being a marketer, not in your space, I would give advice to use music it's a perfect illustration of why you really need someone that is an expert, because those nuances matter a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, outside of video, just sort of the general storytelling piece.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. I mean, I've interviewed someone recently that we talked about storytelling. I consider myself a poor storyteller. Like I certainly don't capture anyone's attention when I'm telling them something. Like I'll like give away the story in the first sentence and then, you know, then I'll ramble about it for 15 minutes. So
yep.
Tell me what a story looks like. And then, you know, Secondly, how that sort of starts to translate into a legal practice.
I'm so glad you asked that question, because it is true. Like storytelling is not simple. And if you're like me, I geek out on this stuff. So I read books like Joseph Campbell, and I read books like Robert McKee's story and Aristotle's Poetics and all that. But let's face it, most lawyers, they're not geeking out on that. Like they just want a simple, it's just tell me how to do this, right? And that is why I'm so excited. And it's a shameless plug, but I'm just so excited about the ABT book, the Narrative Gym, because it is finally, I've been looking high and low for an easy way to wrap their head around story and story structure, right? And so I encountered this gentleman by the name of Randy Olson, and Dr. Randy Olson. He's a Harvard-trained biologist, and he was a marine biologist, and he left that world and went to film school, and he came up with this amazing story template, ABT. And his goal, since he came from the science world, they're notoriously bad storytellers too. So his goal was to bring a simple, actionable framework to the science community. And when I heard it, I said, oh my goodness, this is what the legal community has been looking for forever. So I kind of hunted him down and stalked him and said, would you, you know, he had this original book, The Narrative Gym, and he came out with a business version for, you know, the narrative for the ABT. And I said, would you be willing to do a law version? And he did. So that's what the new book is. But let me tell you about the ABT. It stands for and, but, and therefore, and it is the three pillars of storytelling. And this, and just simplified in those three words. So, and if you are familiar with any of the other story models, beginning, middle, end, or, you know, thesis, antithesis, synthesis, whatever you want to say, however it's been expressed all in all these complex ways for thousands of years, it's always been basically the same. But this is the way that it's boiled down to its simplest thing. So let me show you. The A is called the and material. B, but. T, therefore. The and material is where you start. It's the what we call the agreement. Things that connect you to your listener right out of the gate that we can all sort of, you know, connect with and agree with. It's not controversial. It's what we would call the ordinary world. But every good story then has to sort of turn you upside down, have this inciting incident to send things spiraling out of control. It's the conflict. It's the contradiction. It's the stuff that activates the brain of the listener, right? Because if you're just and, it's pretty boring. And after a while, people tune out. But once you say but, everybody's all in, right? Because you want to know what comes next. And it actually sets to work on your brain. This is how your brain processes information. So the but is the sort of meat of the story, the journey. It's the problem that you're trying to solve. And then the therefore is the resolution. It's the consequence. It's the thing that actually quiets the brain back down again and brings you in for that super landing where you're sold. And so it's a marketing thing. It's a storytelling thing. It's a movie thing. It's an everything. You will see the ABT in every effective mode of communication in the history of humankind. You will see this structure. So Randy uncovered it and expressed it in this great form. So let me give you a movie example. I'm going to give you the ABT of this movie, and you'll tell me what the movie is. A boy discovers an alien in his backyard and forms a deep bond of friendship with it. But he soon realizes that it will die if he doesn't help it get home. Big problem. And therefore, he's got to contact the aliens, out with the government, and send his friend home, right? You know the movie.
Well, I hope it's E.T. because I'm really bad at movies. And when you said that, I was like, this is not good. This is not good.
You got it. It's E.T. It's E.T. But do you see the huge problem there? It's like, great, there's an alien. Oh, neat. And they're friends. And there's Reese's Pieces. And everything's cool. And all of a sudden, and then they become friends. And all of a sudden, this thing's going to die. The government's hunting them down. It's all this conflict and trauma. And then you have a resolution. So, you know, we put that into work in criminal cases. Bill and John were lifelong friends. They were deeply addicted, let's say, to, you know, some substances. Therefore. So what we use this to do is structure our overall case theories. And then we build out more smaller stories to tell the big story, but all using the same ABT framework. So if I were doing this in marketing, right? So it's what you do legally, marketing. Like if I was going to come up with, well, this is what I do, you know, for sentencing videos, what would an ABT be to sort of convince somebody that they would want my services? So I'd take a stab at it. But, you know, a client comes to me, you're going to be sentenced for having committed some crime. And there are a lot of lawyers who handle criminal cases, right? We're a dime a dozen, you know? But I'm a nationally recognized expert in sentencing advocacy, having pioneered this field of sentencing videos, you know? Therefore, if you want a lawyer with extensive experience, comprehensive understanding of the process, cutting edge resources at their disposal, hire me, right? So something like that. That may not be the very best example. And then, and of course, in the book, we start out with the Miranda rights. It's the perfect illustration of the difference between non-narrative and narrative. You know, everybody knows the Miranda rights, but what's the problem for lawyers? Everybody ignores the Miranda rights and talks to the police and gives, you know, confessions. And that's very hard for a defense lawyer when your client has confessed to a crime. It's even more difficult when they actually didn't do the crime. And I know some of your listeners are saying, well, why would they confess to a crime if they didn't do it? It happens. It happens more than you know. And one study for the exonerated people who've been found exonerated after spending 20, 30 years in prison, but they had DNA that proved their innocence, some 30% of those cases involved false confessions. So if you look at the structure of Miranda, it's like you have the right to remain silent and anything you say can be used against you in court and you have a right to a lawyer and if you can't afford one, you can get one and you can stop questioning. It's like and. And so my theory is that's in one ear and out the other. You know, what if the police said, you have a right to a lawyer, but if you do talk to us, we're going to use that against you in court. Therefore, maybe you should talk to a lawyer before we have this conversation. How many times do you think they'd actually go forward and talk to the police after that? Right? That would be persuasive. Now, of course, the police aren't in the business of persuading you not to talk to them, but that's the difference between persuasive narrative and complete non-narrative.
Right.
So
yeah, you kind of started to do this, but I love it if you could give a couple examples of what an ABT method might look like for like criminal defense cases, just hypotheticals. You know, if someone's out there like, I do criminal defense, mm-hmm. Break down a few examples that you've seen in your past so that people can just see what that looks like.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe it would be useful to, and I may be predating you, I don't know how old you are, but O.J. Simpson case. Because that's just a court case that lots of people know about and they're familiar with. And of course, they know that he was found not guilty. So I will always start out when I'm counseling someone about formulating the story of their case. What is the big problem you have to solve for here? What is the major problem you have to overcome? And that's what you build your story around. So in the OJ case, what was the big problem? Do you know? Well, you may be. I don't know if you follow.
Well, I remember it, but I mean, he was accused of killing. You mean like the evidence? Wasn't there like
something? Knives? Yeah. So the big, big problem is you're charged with murder. So let's put that aside. Like, that's the obvious problem. But I'm saying in terms of the case, what is the problem? And yeah, you're right. There was basically what people would describe as a mountain of evidence. And a lot of it was scientific evidence. It was DNA evidence. It was blood, DNA blood evidence, right? Which is a lawyer's worst nightmare. Because the science is the science. I know there's some debate about that in these modern times, in some circles, but the science is the science. So what's the big problem? The big problem is overwhelming evidence, including DNA. There was a trail of the victim's blood, like in OJ's car, and of course the bloody glove that's found near his home that they say is his glove and all that. So that's what you have to overcome. And how did these folks do it? Well, there's something in the book we call the Dobzhansky template, which is we take our whole legal case and see if we can boil it down into one thing and focus on that one thing. So the Dobzhansky template goes like this. Nothing in the world of X makes sense except in the light of this, right? So in OJ's case, I would say maybe nothing in that case – from a defense, and when I'm building the theory of my case and I'm trying to persuade a jury, my starting point would be something like nothing in this case makes sense except in the light of corruption. And I will hang on to that one word, because if you can boil down your case into one word, you're doing great. Because it's, you know, we're in a society, it's information overload. And lawyers are not good at simplicity. right? We embrace complexity and we think we've got to get every fact out there. We've got to make sure we hit every base. We got to ask every question on cross-examination because by golly, if we miss something, the whole world's going to blow up, right? And we need to start thinking in an opposite way, which is boil it down to its simplest elements because that's how you persuade, right? So what's your one thing? So now we boiled it down to corruption and we tell stories about corruption, right? And any story that the OJ ever told was a story of corruption, whether it was corruption of the police who admittedly lied. Mark Furman lied under oath about using the N-word when they had him on tape doing it. They had him on tape bragging about planting evidence to an author he was talking to. And so he was a corrupt cop. And even with the DNA, the Barry Scheck, who's the genius and the foremost expert in DNA, understood. I can't attack the science. There's no way to say that's not, the DNA isn't right, but what I can do is attack the process. The process was corrupted by bungling police or police that maybe had a vial of OJ's blood and maybe they contaminated the evidence with blood. So it was another story about corruption and not necessarily the kind of corruption we say, that you're lying, you're a horrible human being, but part of that corruption story was just tainted evidence, right? And so the defense ran narrative circles around the prosecution. And even there, Henry Lee, when he testified, he said something brilliant on the stand. He said, if you're eating a bowl of spaghetti and you find one cockroach, you're going to throw the whole bowl out. You're not going to keep eating. The whole bowl is done. So what they did is they said, we found this legitimate, credible evidence of corruption in this case. And therefore, that calls the entire mountain of evidence into question, right? So, and then if I wanted to go and boil it down into an ABT, I think it would be, I don't have it at the top of my head, but something of, there is a mountain. We want our police to be honest and follow procedures. And we want the guilty to be held accountable, right? These terms of agreement that everybody, nothing controversial there. But in this case, we have lying, cheating, tainted evidence. The glove didn't fit, right? And therefore, you must acquit, right? And the glove didn't fit is a visual example of corruption as well. But that would be very simple ABT. And if you go back and pull Johnny Cochran's opening statement, you'll see those pillars in there. He doesn't express it like that. But if you look at what he's saying, it's very clearly in the structure of here's my and material, here's my but, and here's my therefore. And if you go just take it out of the law, read the Gettysburg Address, and you will see it's one of the most powerful, persuasive pieces of oratory in human history. And you will see it's short. It's so short. People think the Gettysburg Address is super long. I think it's like a couple hundred words. And it is pure ABT format. Go read Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. It's there. It's been baked in the cake for centuries. And now we're just kind of bringing it, putting it in clear focus and bringing it to the legal world.
Yeah. And so in past, in our conversation prior to recording, you mentioned that there's story frameworks that are like 27 steps or something like that. So you're basically saying that this ABT framework takes those bigger ones and just kind of breaks them into categorical smaller chunks so that it's easier to digest.
Yeah. It takes the complex and makes it simple. Now, the framework is simple, easy to understand. But the process of implementing it, I wouldn't call simple. It's just that's why we call it the narrative gym, because the idea is you're developing your muscles, your narrative muscles. You're developing what we call narrative intuition. So we're giving you the framework. And then the idea is to do it, try to work with it in every way you can to build up your narrative storytelling muscles. So, for example, if you're sending an email, do it in ABT. See how that works. If you are doing a tweet, you know, where you have limited characters, try it in ABT and see what kind of response that you get, engagement on social media that you get when you use that framework instead of something else, and see how that goes. And I guarantee you, you're going to see the results, because that's how you draw people in and engage them.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question, is how do you, I mean, you know, you can learn it through obviously reading the book, clearly, like you said, you know, it's not difficult to learn something new, but implementing is a whole nother strategy. For, you know, you gave an example of emails, you know, social media, something like that. For a lawyer implementing it into their practice, what are other areas that you would suggest them trying to incorporate it? You know, that maybe isn't like putting aside an hour to like do this exercise, but it's like, okay, the next time you do these things, maybe try and, you know, spend an extra 5 or 10 minutes with this strategy.
Sure. Elevator pitch. You know, you run into opposing counsel in the hallway in the courtroom, and you want to sort of get the ball rolling to get that lawyer on viewing the case in your way. Have an ABT handy in your pocket that you can drop on them in 20 seconds and leave. because it'll stick with them. That's the thing, you know. If you end up talking to the press for anything about your case, ABT is crucial, because they work on sound bites, right? So this is about controlling the narrative. The more that we just spew out all this information and hope something sticks, then what happens is people just take that information and they build their own story around it. So when you frame it in that way, it's your story. You own it. There's nothing they can do with it except be on your wavelength. My sister, who spent her whole life as a marketing executive in Microsoft, and she worked with companies on branding and helping them tell their story, she said it's about sacrifice. And I said, what do you mean, Jordan? That's interesting. And she said, you know, we want to deliver as much information as we can. We think that all this information is important. But the truth is, you've got to kill your darlings. You've got to sacrifice some of this stuff that you think you want to communicate and get to the core of your message. That's the most effective way that we do this. So anytime you're talking, if you talk to a client, like I gave you a little ABT about why someone should hire me, you know, have it in your pocket. What do you want them to take away from your initial consult? Right.
Yeah.
It's also good just active listening too, when you have engaged a client and they are trying to tell you their problem. You know, it's a way to sort of interact with them, to be an active listener, but also to drill down to the actual focus on what is their real issue that you need to solve. So the simple answer is ABT everywhere, all day, every day.
ABT your wife, ABT your kids.
Absolutely.
I'm aggressive. You know, it makes me think of, you mentioned kind of the one word, like, you know, corruption is like key phrase and simplifying. And I've always thought about that, like with politics, like a candidate slogan, like really, like, you know, make America great again, like regardless of your political affiliation. I mean, it's clean, you know, you like understand what it is and all the noise. And I think, you know, the recent political season has shown that like the noise around those things, it doesn't even matter what you say. Like you can say whatever you want around it, but you kind of have that defining message that's always reinforced. Then people latch to that. And then all the noise is just like for the pundits and people that are like actually analyzing things.
Right. 100%. And it's not a coincidence that the last president was successful, because for whatever you want to say about him, he was right on in his messaging. And Make America Great Again, MAGA, is a perfect example. And, by the way, is an ABT. It's simplified. But it's you know, America was once a great and prosperous nation, but we've lost our way. Therefore, MAGA, you know, that's it. There's a whole story baked in the cake of MAGA. And it is. It's a very powerful message. And by the way, so I mentioned, you know, there's a business version of this book, now the law version. The next version of the book is politics, and it's coming out maybe this month or next month, that Randy has partnered with a longtime political a consultant named Dave Gold, and they wrote the politics version. Then I think there's an environment version coming out. So the ABT is really kind of a movement that's becoming, you know, it's permeant. It shows how it really can be used in any discipline, in any area of life. So,
well, I love how simple it is. You know, I've read some books on storytelling, like a little bit, and they're not that complicated, but they're more complicated. They're like, you're the guide, you're not the hero. And there's like kind of like right. all this like conversation. And it's like, okay, like my role. And while I still think that that's true, but it sort of just makes it more complicated, at least here. And this is the storytelling, maybe not the roles, but it just seems very simple, especially with a couple examples. Yeah. It helps.
Yeah. And I call it a gateway drug in the sense that you don't need to go any further than A, B, and T to be an effective communicator. But because all those story models are baked in the cake of the ABT, you may get curious. And then you may want to, okay, well, what is all this hero's journey stuff? Now I'm interested. So I'm going to talk about Joseph Campbell. And you can broaden your you know perspective on story if you want to. Like I said, I geek out on that. I love it. But you may not, that may not be your thing. And if not, fine. The ABT is all you're ever going to need.
Yeah. Well, Doug, thanks so much. That was incredibly just, I know, informative for me. And I love the way that it's all broken down and the examples you used.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
So, you know, people want to learn more about you, get in contact, get your help, consult, whatever the case might be. Where do they find you?
DougPassonLaw.com would probably be the best place to start. The book is available in Kindle and in print version on Amazon, and on all the social media spots as well, usually under Doug Passon Law.
Great. Well, thank you so much again. Really appreciate your time. And to everybody listening, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next episode.
Thanks, thank you, Adam.